Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on nature for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say, fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your bike, let's...
Well, hello there. This is Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. Is the Phil and Bill show. As everybody knows, Bill's got some medical issues going on with the family, so he's not going to be here today. hoping pretty soon I could say, hey, Bill, how are you doing? So I'll let you guys know when he's coming, or I might just surprise you. But I heard some things today about, a couple of things. I mean, I heard Richard Dreyfuss. He was talking about his passion for the Constitution and American exceptionalism. So I'm going to let him tell it how it is. We'll go from there.
Well, my next guest has a lack of knowledge of civics and appreciation of our Constitution is the fundamental reason for America's problems. Academy Award-winning actor Richard Dreyfuss joins me now. Richard, great having you back. Thank you so much. You know, I hear this stuff, it's so troubling. People tend to not know anything about our country. Why do people need to know about our Constitution?
Because we were responsible for the greatest revolution in the history of human civilization. We gave to 98% of the human race freedoms that they had been lashed for, lost fingers for, or had their heads chopped off for. And we gave it to them for free, and we are the most revolutionary nation that has ever been and ever will be. And we don't know enough about our Constitution or our history to know why we should be proud of it.
Pretty good. I had another one.
Yeah.
I had another one. This guy's name is Bill Maher. And he was talking about privacy and free speech in the wake of the guy that owns the Clippers, Donald Sterling, what he did. So let me play this.
Now, last week when President Obama was asked about the Sterling episode, he said, when ignorant folks want to advertise their ignorance, just let them talk. But Sterling didn't advertise. He was bugged. And while he may not be worth defending, the Fourth Amendment is. That's the one that says we have the right to be secure in our person, in our homes, in our property. Well, not if bitching to your girlfriend in your home loses you your property. In an op-ed in the Washington Post, Kathleen Parker offered one way of dealing with the modern world's ubiquitous invasions of privacy. Give up. She wrote, if you don't want your words broadcast in the public square, don't say them. Really? Even at home? We have to talk like a White House press spokesman? She then looked on the bright side by saying, such potential exposure forces us to more carefully select our words and edit our thoughts. Always editing? I'd rather be a Mormon. And that's what we'd all be. Mitt Romney. I would listen to 100 horrific Cliven Bundy rants if that was the price of living in a world where I could also hear interesting and funny people talk without a filter. Perhaps most chilling of all, Parker said that speaking one's mind isn't really all it's cracked up to be, which is quite a statement since her job is speaking her mind. It's like the mailman telling you letters are stupid. So let me get this straight. We should concede that there's no such thing anymore as a private conversation, so therefore remember to lawyer everything you say before you say it. And hey, speaking your mind was overrated anyway, so you won't miss it. Well, I'll miss it. I'll miss it a lot. And for the record, speaking my mind is absolutely everything it's cracked up to be. So many things in life have let me down. The iPod Nano, the Spider-Man musical, Al Gore for president, M. Night Shyamalan movies, the entire 80s, Lance Armstrong, my scout leader. But speaking my mind, priceless. Does anyone really want there to be no place where we can let our hair down and not worry if the bad angel in our head occasionally grabs the mic? What about the bathroom? Not a public bathroom. Of course I expect to be taped and photographed in there. But my bathroom at home, would it be okay if that was kind of a cone of silence where I could invite friends in to speak freely? Who wants to live in a world where the only privacy you have is inside your head? That's what life in East Germany was like. That's why we fought the Cold War, remember? So we'd never have to live in some awful limbo where you never knew who, even among your friends, was an informer. And now we're doing it to ourselves. Well, don't. Don't be part of the problem. If this was a campaign ad, I'd say, call Kathleen Parker and tell her you're not ready to edit everything you say in private. Just to fuck with her head. Tell her you have an audio tape of a book party she gave at her home with five close female friends, all of whom had way too much wine. Because I'm sure there's been that night, and she wouldn't want that tape to come out. Who would? Because we're humans. We're not that good. We're not ready to live in a world where everything has to come out perfectly on the first take. There's a reason houses have doors on them and windows have shades. And if I want to sit in the privacy of my living room and say, I think the Little Mermaid is hot and I want to bang her. Or I don't like watching two men kiss. Or I think tattoos look terrible on black people. I should be able to, even if you think that makes me an asshole. Now, do I really believe those things? I'm not telling you because you're not in my living room.
There you go. What do you think about that?
Different.
Huh?
I said different, but it's what we talk about, you know?
Yeah. There's a couple other things I was going to talk about. Happened to know a great man, and I knew him for a while, and he passed away on Saturday. His name was Andy. He was a really good guy. He always knew how to brighten up a room when he walked in. And he can be sorely missed. And I'd like to give all the people in the SoCal chapter our condolences. I talked to Bill to make sure I passed on condolences to the brothers. And as I understand, the funeral arrangements are pending, so once I get that information, you can send me an email, or you guys know how to get my phone number, call me, and I'll let you know what's going on. As soon as I find out, I'll post it. The other thing was, I talked to quite a few people, and he's going to be sorely missed. He's loved by many, hated by few, but I'm at a loss for words now. But the only other thing I could say is, well, Nora, you know what I'm talking about. He was a great guy. He's a man among men. And he was the definition of a true one percenter.
He was just a hearted giant, you know?
Yep. But Eunice is on the line. And I told Eunice the other day, since we cut her short, I'll let her talk. But in about 15 minutes, I have to make a call to the guest one of the guests that's going to be here tonight. So let me mute Eunice. How are you doing today, Eunice?
Oh, how are you doing? My heartfelt wishes are with the family. You know, my heart is truly with them. I hate to see anybody, you know, be taken, but in a much better place than some of us right now. And I'm sure he's looking down upon you, you know, saying, cut it out, Phil. Just cut it out right now, you know. It's hard when we lose close friends. And
this guy knew how to break a room. I mean, there's stories I could tell, but that's something I'll do once I get permission to really do that.
Yeah, that's, you know, like I say, I always say to anybody that I lose to the family, I just tell them my heart is with you because I understand it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think over the years and being my age, I've heard too many people say, I'm sorry, and what are they sorry for? My loss? You know, it's, how do you tell somebody you're sorry?
Yeah.
I only learned that over the years, and now I just, and I've said it before, I just say my heart is with you, you know, to let them know that I understand, you know. Because the older you get, the more people you lose, and it's amazing.
Trust me, there's been a lot of that happening the last
few
months. But on a brighter note, I cut you off the other day, and I haven't had a chance to call you, and I apologize for that. I've just been running 100 miles an hour. But everything's going on.
And that thing we'll have to discuss off the radio, okay?
Sure. And I want to tell you guys, I'll tell you a quick thing. Saturday, I went up to watch a movie with some good friends, and I was thoroughly impressed with this movie. It's called Water and Power, and I know it's just playing right here in California right now, but I'm pretty sure it's going to go across the states. And if you get a chance to see it, you ought to go see it. It's a really good fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that knows me, that's been in my house, knows I have close to 7,000 movies in my house. So I do watch a lot of movies, but this one, I got a chance to ride with everybody, got a chance to break bread with everybody, got a chance to sit there in the movie between everybody. I listened to the talk, I saw the passion on the screen. Great movie.
I have to watch it.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good movie. It's called Water and Power. And tomorrow night, we're going to have the man who wrote the story. Started out as a play and then got made into a motion picture, which was made in 12 days. His name is Richard Montoya. He should be on tomorrow right at 6 or a little after. But and then Thursday, I got a confirmation from Emilio Nicholas Gonzalez, who's also in the movie. They should be stopping by. And one of the gentlemen that's going to be on tonight, his name is Gilbert Escobar. He's got some stuff he wants to talk about. He's a Mexican comedian. He's also an activist. He's also does a lot of charity work. That's basically how I met him. But he's got something he wants to talk about with the prison system. So that might be a future run coming. But enough of that with the comments. Go ahead, Eunice. You were talking about last week that the bill's going to be coming up for something this week, or
yeah, very, very, very shortly. As I told you before, the Senate had pulled it last year and put it in a conference committee. It is now back on the Senate floor, which
mm-hmm.
we have 40 senators, and 40 senators are going to be passing it. Then it goes back to the House of Representatives, who had changed the window, meaning the time. Like, we had 55 years, and they brought it back to 27 years, and that wasn't our plan, and so we had to pull it from the floor because the Ways and Means Committee had changed it, which they really had no right to do, but they did it. So, but now out of 160 House of Representatives, we got like 110, I think it is, that are going to pass the bill. So then it goes before the governor, and the governor has 10 days to sign it. So we're just waiting, you know, we're counting the days when the Senate releases it and sends it back to the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. So there was a discussion on, as I told you before, they wanted to name the bill after me. And, you know, I really thought about that and thought about it. And I says, listen, this bill is not about me. This is about the survivors and the children. And so you have to come up with another name, you know. And I really feel good about that, you know. I mean, why would they want my name? I mean, there was hundreds of people that worked hard on this bill.
Right.
So, you know, that's why we're going to do it that way. Because I said, no, I don't want my name up there, you know. Just getting it passed is enough for me. Another thing, yesterday I met with the bishop, and he's become a friend, believe it or not, and he is one that has no tolerance whatsoever about this. And you know, Phil, it's not just about the Catholic Church. It's about any pedophile. I think, I don't know if I told you, but my granddaughter just had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is a pedophile. So, you know how I have to fight that.
Right.
And like I said, I met with the bishop yesterday, and I meet with him several times. And it's going to be Paul, my anniversary in June 17th, it'll be 25 years. So the bishop asked me yesterday, he said, do you mind? I would like to bless your marriage. And we're just going to have a, you know, it's just going to be Paul and I and the bishop. That's the way I want it. You know, it's just a celebration for us, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, if you knew me 25 years ago, you would have been saying the same thing. How did these two ever get together, you know? And that's a good thing. It's something that we just want to redo our vows, and we'll do it privately, you know. So that's a good thing. Let me see what else. Oh, my daughter, I'm bringing her home here. This is the first time she's ever said that she would come back to the house. And this is the one that I've had a lot of problems with. And she's putting herself first. So we're just going to keep our fingers crossed until we can get her herself.
Right.
Taken care of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that will work for us. And she needs a break. But she had to make this decision, nobody else.
Right.
And she made it, so I'll get her tomorrow.
Okay.
So there's a lot of good things that's going along. The other thing I really want to talk to you about off the radio about that. And I've talked to Nara. She knows what I'm talking about, right, Nara?
Yes.
Well, don't leave anybody trying to guess what you're talking about. Like you said,
no.
Talk about here. Don't drag
on the phone. Yeah. Oh no. I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I get a bunch of emails going, hey, what the fuck was she talking about? And I, you know.
Tell them I was talking about my boyfriend. I have a boyfriend. I'm 73. I have a boyfriend.
You
know. So, you know, a lot of good things are coming together, And I guess that's all you can do, you know. It's a good day today, and it'll be a better day. Oh, my car. I don't know if I had told you about my new car, but down in Florida, my husband put it in reverse and put it in drive, and it wouldn't go anywhere. Now, this is a GM, you know, it's a Chevrolet, it's a Malibu. So we brought it to the dealership while we had it towed to the dealership, and they said they totally fixed it, and they kept it for 3 weeks, and probably about 3 weeks after it was done, it started making that, you could actually hear it shift when you put it in reverse, and then you could hear it shifting, which it's not supposed to shift. You know, when you put it in drive, it's supposed to be like kind of a smooth ride, and it's only got a little bit worse, so I brought it to our dealership here today, and I was there like 4.5 hours, and they're going to tear the thing apart again because it's not working right. We had Brian, who is the service manager, take the car out with me, and I drove it. He wanted to see how I drove it because of my age. Well, whatever. So then I said to him, okay, you drive it. I mean, he could feel it on the passenger side, but he could feel it more so when he drove it, you know. And Joe, our friend, drove it too, and he could feel it. So it's, again, we're fighting with them, and they have to do it by the computer.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand, but I guess they do. They charge it up to the computer, and the computer kind of like says what it's going to do. But apparently that year, it's 2011, wasn't a good year for them. So that's what I have.
Whenever they make a new model and things, it's just like buying a new Harley. You don't buy the first one. You buy the next one because the first one has a lot of bugs. I have a,
right.
I have a friend who bought a 2014 Bagger. And
yeah.
It's May 13th today. He bought it in January, brought it back a week later, and it's still at the dealer.
Well, you know, I never realized what... Yeah, go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
You never buy anything that the new model, it changes the model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... you know, I thought I got a wonderful deal on it because, you know, it was... Only had 5,000 miles on it when I bought it, and actually my husband bought it for an anniversary gift, and I thought it was a wonder, and it was for the first year, you know, and then, like, it just started falling apart last year.
Yeah.
So we'll just, actually it was this year, it was in March, I guess, that it started, so.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they would correct it, and if they didn't correct it, they would... I'll replace it, you know. But I'd rather them just give us what we paid for it and put it towards a new one, you know.
Well, they should just give you a new one and eat the difference.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hoping that's what they do.
Okay.
But,
what else you got cooking?
Well, a few things that are, you know, in the fire. I think I told you last week that I did some volunteer work at a soup kitchen. And it's amazing what we don't see, you know, and don't even think about until you're in the situation, you see it. And that's when I count my lucky stars. And... how the compassion comes out, because if you could see the little children that come in for breakfast, and it's sad, you know. Here, we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world, and here we have children that are starving, and we don't even take care of our own, but we're taking care of everybody else's. And that really upsets me, you know.
Yeah.
when I used to think of soup kitchens, I thought of them, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts and stuff like that. But I can honestly say 75% of that is not that. It's young families that the husbands lost the jobs and they come there 5 days a week.
I can tell you about people on active duty on food stamps and getting their help with the rent being paid.
You know,
you got millionaires.
Yeah, I know.
You got millionaires and retirees who are double dipping in Congress.
Yep.
Yep.
It's sad. It really is, and I'll work there every week, you know, and I'm going to bring in whatever I can bring in, you know, and teach the cooks there how to make things stretch a little bit more, you know, because it's a soup kitchen, and they actually depend on donations, you know. And we got a lot of good people that donate quite a bit, you know, so. But that's when you really feel grateful for what you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I feel very grateful for what I have. Everybody has problems, but you want to know something, Phil? We have choices, and sometimes we can make them and sometimes we can't. But that's what it's all about, our choices. And thank God we're able to make choices. A lot of people don't think so, but thank God we can make our own choices.
Absolutely. But what to do is I'm gonna call this guy right now. So I'm gonna.
Okay. Go ahead. You can mute me.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go do a few things and I'll get back in later. Okay.
All right. No, we're gonna talk to Gilbert. This guy's funny. Funny as shit.
Okay. Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Gilbert, what's happening?
Hello.
Hello, it's Philip. I'm calling you from the show. Are you ready?
What's up, Philip? I'm ready, my brother. Is it okay to say that I'm on the phone?
Mijo, you can say anything. You can swear. There's no 7-second delay, however you feel comfortable.
Okay.
So if you happen to blur one out like...
I just didn't know.
Yeah, if you happen to blur one out like Emilio does, and don't worry about it.
All right, my brother.
But, I hadn't seen you in a while, and I ran into you Saturday, and, you know, it was kind of like, hey, where you been? And I told you what was going on, and work and everything, and I told you we talk on the radio, and here we are.
Right on, man.
I also, that conversation we had about that ride.
Yeah.
I started generating it down here, brother.
Oh, wow, cool, man.
Absolutely.
That's awesome, my brother.
So we had a couple conversations. You might want to tell everybody who you are. And
okay, just let me know when we start, when we're starting.
Yeah, no, just to give everybody a brief background on Gilbert.
Oh, yeah, no, my name's Gilbert Esquivel. I'm a stand-up comedian. And, you know, been doing stand-up comedy for over 20 years. Got a bike last year, back about a year and a half ago. Got a police bike, Harley-Davidson, 2008. So now I got involved in the bike culture, you know, riding with friends. And I never really cared for a bike, never wanted a bike. I was one of these people that didn't want a motorcycle right away. I cringe, you know, but when I sat on a Harley... And the guy told me it was for sale. That's all she wrote. But before that, my friend had told me he had sold my Emilio, a Rivera, had told me about, he was telling me about how he got into the bike culture and why he got into the bike culture and what he loves about bikers and how they always ride for good causes and there's a community, a sense of community and brotherhood and all this stuff, and that's what attracted him to biking, he said. So I was like, wow, that was really neat. So that right away attracted me, and then when I sat on the Harley, I totally decided I wanted to buy it, and I got it. And
there
that's pretty much where I'm at now. And now, you know, I go on little rides here and sometimes once in a while and, you know, just doing that. And I just, we're talking about when I saw Saturday when we went for the ride for Emilio to go see his movie,
right,
Water and Power, there was, what, a couple hundred riders, you think? How many people you think were there?
We think we were just shy of the 400, but...
Wow, okay, yeah, I know there's a lot of bikes, brother, I don't know. I felt like a part of something so big, and it felt so cool to see, yet it's amazing how that's just a, that's not even nothing compared to how many bikers are out there.
Yeah, there's,
you know?
Just for your information, there's 2.3 million registered motorcycles in California.
Wow, that's a lot, man. I mean, you know, to be able to...
You know, when we were talking about that conversation, I don't want to steal what you were going to talk about with the prison system, but when we were talking about that, now just imagine when we talked about getting everybody together along with, you know, the idea of Save the Patch. So imagine if we got 2.3 million registered motorcyclists to show up on one day.
Wow. I mean, even half of that, you got a million man ride. You know,
go ahead.
No, I really, the reason that I started talking about, you know, the reason we got into that conversation about that was that when I realized the power of, I said, I know one thing that motorcycles can do. Riders, they do something that bikes, for some reason, I don't know, brings people together that you would never imagine being together. There's something about riding a motorcycle that just immediate family, no matter your color, your skin, age, anything. And I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when Nicholas was riding that Ducati, when we got to our destination, he looked over at me and he goes, "Hey, you know, I'm on a Ducati. All you guys are on Harleys." And I looked at him, and this is exactly what I said, because I might have told you this once, too. It's not what you ride. It's the ride.
Yeah, I like it. I like it, my brother. I like that. And you know what? What I was it all ties into what we were talking about. My thing was that I loved what I saw, and what I immediately thought about, the inspiration that came to me, was uniting by riding, by getting the people together. I was just thinking, because it was, if you remember, you were probably, how many white guys were there? Just three? You were the only, the rest of us were all Mexicans and some brothers. You know, it didn't make a difference though, man, but I was like, dang,
I can make
Mexicans.
It in any crowd.
What's that?
I can make it in any crowd.
Well, with that, with all the weapons you ride with, you can make it anywhere, bro. Yeah, but you know, I started seeing riders riding together, southern, northern, white, black, brown. I go, you know, everybody riding and using the riding thing to ride all the way up to California and see how many people we can muster up and ride together. And I go, what a trip. I go, but wait a minute, there's got to be something at the end. And I was thinking, wait a minute, Pelican Bay, this big hunger strike they had, this thing that they had, where people don't know that up in Pelican Bay, for people that don't know, is they have the worst of the worst. They send all the trouble inmates, they send them up to Pelican Bay. And that's where the bad guys are at, the baddest of the bad. And then there they got the guys that, you know, these, whatever they call them, shot callers or power players, whatever they got them, in the prison.
They call them shot callers.
They put them up there in this thing called the SHU. It's called the Secured Housing Unit, which is 22 and a half hours of total isolation from anything, even that sensory deprivation. There's no color. There's nothing that can really, there's no human contact. You know, a lot of these guys haven't had touch with another human being since 1991 or 90s, you know, because they're so, like, or whatever, they're trying to keep them away from everybody so much that The only contact that they get is when the officers put their cuffs on them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my thing is this. I'm not sticking up for nobody who's hurt anybody or done anything wrong or a part of that. But my thing is this. I'm an American, okay? And when I have these terrorists come over and kill over 3,000 of our American people on our soil, and you put them in a prison down in Guantanamo Bay, and you start to make a big deal out of how they've been inhumanely, whatever, they're being inhumanely treated, you know, how they're not being treated right and this and that. And you can't do that for our own citizens who are in California who are being treated worse than that? Come on, you can't. That's not justice. And they had a hunger strike. These power players, whoever they are, they had this hunger strike just so they can bring attention to this inhumane treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, the reason that it's so personal to me is because I got a childhood friend that's there. He's up there in that shoe. He's one of those guys that I told you about that
right.
He's been in there since 1991. His last human kind, they used to have cellmates, but then they took that away a few years later. So he's literally had no human contact with the last, I would say, since 95. And he literally, nobody can, when I visit him, I can speak to him through a phone or through glass. Every word is monitored, everything, I even got in trouble from him when he said, don't do that, because I was just moving my hands a little, because I talk with my hands, you know what I mean? That's part of Italian, I guess, I don't know. But he said, don't do that, because they'll think you're throwing some kind of sign at me, and they'll rush you out of here. And so I have to be very careful with this. So this guy, though, he's been in this since he was 16 years old. He did something when he was 16. Okay, fine. He's paying. He got life without parole. All right. Now, my thing is, though, is this. That's why it's personal to me. Is I had a buddy of mine. I have a buddy of mine who's going through this. Now, my thing is, like I said, I'm not sticking up for them. I don't know what's going on. I don't want to know what's going on. But you got there's a thing in the Constitution that says about you got to fit the crime. The punishment has to fit the crime.
Right.
You know. And, dude, I'm telling you, they're doing all this to these guys so that they don't have communications with their other gang members, quote, unquote. You know what I mean? They got so I understand. I don't want to get involved in all this. I don't know. I'm not trying to do that. But what I'm saying is they're trying to keep them from communication, not realizing they communicate even better when you got them where they got them. They have easier communication. You know what I mean? You can't stop the communication. So you know what I mean? But what's happening is this, is that you're still – in your efforts to try to deal with that, you're really, really, now you're repaying evil with evil. And they had a hunger strike, and it's really hard. We all got brothers up there, and we all got friends up there in the system somewhere, sisters even. But my thing is this. Here's my, I have ulterior motives, and this is what I will tell even my friend and all these guys that are up there. My motives are this. I want to be able, because I'm not going to go from this world and tell you how to act in your world over there behind prison walls. I won't do that. I don't have the right to. But I do want to show is this. If we can do this and bring the attention to your cause and at least get them to listen to you guys, all I would hope in return is that you could see what riding together instead of fighting together. You know what I mean? There's a difference when you need to unite. What things you can accomplish by uniting the races instead of killing one another. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm showing you the other way, a better way. That's what I would love to see.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. You know, when you told me that, you could tell by the look on my face, I was involved. I was ready to get involved in that.
Well, yeah, it was just a conversation, and I was like, and then the other people were like, yeah, I'm in, and I'm like, whoa, okay, you know, if this is possible, and if it, you know, I throw it out there and enough and see what responds, like you did, you responded, I mean, cool. It takes one match to start a forest fire, bro.
Absolutely.
And Crescent City is the Redwood Forest, bro. Well, wouldn't it be cool to ride to Sacramento, bro, just to bring attention to what's going on, and then take the ball and say, here you go, guys, give them the ball, here you go, work with all this attention, see what you can do with it.
Yeah, I'm thinking we start at the border, Chula Vista.
Let's do it, homie. From Chula Vista to Crescent City, man. Oh, I'm sorry, to Sacramento.
I would love to
ride to Crescent City through that redwood forest.
actually, it'd be San Ysidro, North Tijuana.
North Tijuana, vamos, let's go. I'm down, my brother. I am down, and you know, if that's possible, I would love to see it happen. You know, I would definitely. That would be cool. Let's see where this leads.
Absolutely, we can. We're gonna push that. If we can get it rocking by the end of the summer.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's I'm down. You know, we'll definitely see if we get any interest or anybody want to, you know, throw in some, or just,
you know,
let us know you're down. Let's see how many people we can get to say, I'm down.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. Today we had 86,340 people look at the blog.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's a lot of people, man. Wow, that's awesome, my brother. Oh, my God. You know, what we were talking about, what we were saying about a tag-along?
Yeah.
For people who, let's say people don't want to ride all the way to Sacramento or Crescent City, you know. You just want to just tag along as far as you can go and turn back. Just ride as much as you want and turn back around.
The thing with turning around is you do it on the way back.
What's that?
Well, just like, I mean, if we have that many people, we have signs, posters, or whatever, of course, American flags, and the people that turn around and go back, they can show what's going on going the other way.
You know how people pass the torch, the Olympic torch? It'd be nice to take that flag and we pass the flag on to a chapter of a club and some different, or a different club in different areas. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Let them, or somebody will honor somebody, a special biker or a rider. You know what I mean? A retired cop. Even, I don't know. Everybody rides, bro.
Here's an old saying: strong souls aren't just born; they're built by forging through the most fucked up perils in life, and still have the ability to shine.
Wow. Wow. Love it. Love it, man. Love it.
You know, right now, we got three guys in China listening.
Oh, man. How do you say hello in Chinese?
Hello.
Or do you even have to?
No, I don't think we have to. They're listening.
Oh, wow. Hi, guys.
Absolutely.
That's awesome, man.
Like right now,
imagine riding a Harley through China?
Yeah, well, there's some guys there that do that, but not mainland China. They do it in other places that China happens to possess. But we got, right now we got Germany, Australia, Canada, Poland, of course China, Spain, Switzerland, France, the United Kingdom, as well as Iraq and the Ukraine, Belgium, Indonesia, France, the Netherlands.
Wow.
Russia, Brazil, it's like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. Like right now, France is 3,499 people.
Oh,
Russia's
3,627.
And I guess the reason they listen to us is because they don't get this kind of conversations over there.
Wow. Well, they got prisons in every country, man. You know, and I tell you what. Go ahead.
The United States happens to be the money market of prisons. You want to make money, open a prison. It takes about 30 grand a year to house somebody.
How much?
You know, out of the 30 grand, you know something's getting skimmed off every prisoner.
Wow. Well, I know, and then they get paid for every time they take you on the bus to go from your cell to go to court in a different time. They get paid every time they take you out of that cell. And I remember I used to get taken out of my cell to go to court that I wasn't supposed to go to a few times, and somebody got paid at my expense.
Really?
You stop and think, though, look, the prisons here in America. Now, I did a show at La Mesa Prison in Tijuana, Mexico. This is the prison in Mexico where your family would do time with you. So there were inmates in there with their wives and kids doing time.
Right.
And they had to stop the kids.
Yeah, huh? I think Mexico is the only place where they can come see and spend the weekend.
I know that one thing there, when I went there, they had the kids where they took the kids out at the time because the kids were becoming sophisticated in criminal activity. And the husbands would make the wives go work and steal and do whatever crimes and come back and bring them money. So they stopped that. However, it's still a co-ed prison. So the women, there's guys and girls in there. And the girls walk around with hickeys all over their necks because they sell their bodies to the other inmates just to survive, many of them. And they don't get cells. They don't get prison cells. They don't have enough cells for everybody. What a lot of these guys do, they have to tie themselves to a wall or a post and sleep like that. This is bad. So I'm not asking for sympathy for our prison system. Our prison system is, like you said, $30,000 a year per inmate. Now, you know how many families don't make $30,000 a year all over the world?
Exactly.
Now, we're paying effort, and they got us. So, I mean, the prisons are, the way they're built are beautiful. However, the only problem with the prisons in California is there's a big, big, big race problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of race, it's because of money. But being that these guys all have to divide up in race from the beginning, guess what? When one person fights, everybody has to work together. Now, it becomes a race issue.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? That there's a lot of that in there. You know, that's their world. It's not our world.
No.
I don't want nobody to think... I'm sorry.
It's just like anything else. You know, politics will kill it every time.
Yeah, and it's hard to generate sympathy for people that have hurt other people. I mean, that's the bottom line, and that's the truth. It's not even about that. It's about the Constitution. It's
mm-hmm.
about Americans being treated, regardless, you cannot be treated worse as an American citizen because of your crimes. And again, these guys are, if you think about the gang stuff that's in the jails, if you watch it on TV, all those guys are, they're hurting each other. It's conflict between each other. Very rarely does it come out to us, and when it does, they get punished for it. They're not supposed to touch us. This is, they're not, those gangs, the prison gangs, they say that families are off limits, and you get hurt. If you hurt somebody's family member, and there have been guys, yeah, this is TV, this is all public record, by the way, about one guy, it's a known story, who hurt the baby, and guess what? Because of that, they took him out. Then it's a conflict between the gangs. That's between them. You know what I mean? Our thing is that we just want to make sure that the punishment fits the crime. Okay? Now,
right.
When you got people coming over here and blowing up buildings with innocent people going to work to make a living, and you're going to sit there and make sure they don't get, that they get treated humane? Humane, really? That's kind of hypocritical to me, and I the last time my buddy, you know, asked for my help, I really didn't want to do nothing because I didn't want to jeopardize my celebrity. I didn't
right.
want it to jeopardize my career. I was
right.
thinking of me, you know, I was thinking of me. And then now after I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I need to just not bring the attention to the cause of, I need just to make sure that we can ride at Sacramento, let's say. And we can bring that to the attention. And as we're riding, generate the interest in this ride and be talking about what this ride is for. With something like that, man, I'm serious. I would just hope and pray for a miracle that would get these guys at least out of this isolation. Put them in a system, in a prison by themselves. Let them all at least, you know, come on. Just let them get out in the sun, man. They had no sun. They have not, the sun has not touched their skin in years.
They don't have no sun contact. They only see the sun through a little window that's up in the little walk area that they take them out for the hour and a half every day. And there's a little tiny window at the top. That's the only light that they see.
Mm-hmm.
Not even Al-Qaeda gets that, bro. Al-Qaeda gets there outside, dude. They get sun. They get they get treatment. They get special treatment.
They get a soccer ball.
If they get a soccer ball, really?
Yeah, they get a soccer ball. They get to play activities.
Wow, man. Oh my gosh. And my friend gets to walk a little cement, a bigger cement. It's another cell about 3. Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. They take him out. He has to turn around. They have to handcuff him, take him out, take him to another room, which is about 3 times bigger than his cell, and he gets to walk back and forth for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. No ball, no other person to hang out with, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You can't do the same for them? They don't be fine. Don't give them no contact. Whatever, but let them have a soccer ball. Or let them play with the guys. You know what I mean? I mean, come on, dude, really?
Yeah.
I'm not saying let them free. I'm not saying let them out. I'm saying just don't let them, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sad.
There's a little known law. You know, when people show up at everywhere and for a run, you know, sometimes they're closed events. Sometimes they're open events. And I think you know what I mean when I say closed event. It means unless you were invited, you can't go. Open event is anybody can attend.
Right.
From anywhere. But the Supreme Court ruled in the case of Cohan versus California, 403 U.S. 15, in 1971, brother, that individuals have the constitutional right under the First Amendment to wear clothing which displays writing or designs. In addition, the right of an individual to freedom of association has long been recognized and protected by the United States Supreme Court. Thus, a person's right to wear the clothing of his choice, as well as the right to belong to any club or organization of his choice, is constitutionally protected, and persons or establishments who discriminate on the basis of clothing or club membership are subject to lawsuit. Don't subject yourself to civil and criminal penalties and expensive, time-consuming lawsuits. Don't discriminate against people wearing color or motorcycle attire. That goes along the lines of what we're talking about with Save the Patch.
Wow.
In Australia, wow. like I told you, okay, me, you, and Emilio are sitting. We're sitting at that restaurant at a table, right? And say the sheriff pulls, L.A. County Sheriff pulls in there and sees the three of us sitting at the table. He gets on the blower. Tells the sergeant that he's watching 3 suspicious characters. Now, none of us have done anything. We're just sitting there. He comes back. We all get arrested. We don't get told why. We get put in 3 separate cars, and we don't see each other. They can lock us up indefinitely. And they don't have to tell anybody where you're at. That's going on in Australia right now.
Wow.
That law they're trying to pass down there has broken up families, closed businesses, people have lost their homes, their kids can't go to school, they're not getting the right food to eat, nothing, because they locked up the breadwinner.
Just for wearing a patch?
Yes, sir.
Wow. What brought all that on? Now, this is just Australia?
It's Australia.
And what brought the crackdown? What was it that brought the crackdown? Are they trying to crack down on all clubs or just motorcycle clubs?
No, they went after, first they went after motorcycle clubs, but now they've broadened it and they're going after everybody. Guilt by association.
Wow.
I've been beating that drum for the last Bill and I have been beating that drum for the last 5 years. Whatever happens in Australia, to Canada, and comes to the United States, it might go to the East Coast first, but eventually it makes its way to the West Coast. If it happens in the West Coast, it eventually makes its way east.
Oh man.
If you go, yeah. If you looked at my blog, you can see why it gets 80,000 hits a day because of the information that gets posted there. It gets posted firsthand. Everything on there is firsthand information. It's not anything the news wants you to know. It's the true shit from the people that are living it.
Wow, man. Wow. Wow, that's sad. You know, and here's I'm wondering that if you were to pull off such a feat as we're talking about, to be able to make change in the political arena, if they were to see Bikes have that much power, do you think that's when they will start coming at them? I mean, because America gets, they get afraid when they see something or someone with power.
Well, you know the same group that I know, and you know who started the Save the Patch thing in here in California, who was the first one to have the fundraiser. And basically, it's like this. If I could get everybody to come together for one day, just one day, to do like you said, we take that ride, you imagine how that would look?
Oh, dude. Woo.
You imagine the attention we would draw? National media?
Yes. Big time.
We'd have guys trying to infiltrate on the ride.
Wow, yeah, wow. Yeah, that's true, bro. That's true.
Just like if you join the COC, you have to have 5 active members. Okay? So right now where I live on Camp Pendleton, there's 76 documented gangs of on the Marine base.
What?
76. 76
gangs on the Marine base.
Yes.
You gotta be kidding me.
No. On any Navy ship, you got they call them the cliques, but we all know what it is. But
yeah.
What I'm saying is this, if we could get 5 members from every organization, I'm not gonna call them a gang, I'm not gonna call them a social club, I'm gonna call them an organization. If we can get 5 members from every organization in the state of California, I'd say that's probably close to 200,000 people. So just imagine 200,000. Just imagine 200,000 people trying to ride up the freeway on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh my gosh, dude, that would be crazy! Wow, how long does it take to ride to Sacramento, bro, from San Diego?
Probably about, well, depending on if the front guy's going 80, the back guys are doing 100 to keep up. So you figure 8 or 9 hours, stopping for gas and everything. I'd round it out to about 12.
Uh-huh. Wow. Man, could you imagine? That would be a big... See, that's the kind of stuff that I was seeing. That's what I saw. I saw just a line of bikes all the way up from San Diego to Sacramento, bro, nonstop. I can see that, dude.
Exactly.
Man, I think the CHP would try to stop that, man.
I don't. They can't. We don't need a permit to ride.
Wow.
Just out on a ride.
Wow.
Just like the people that stand on top of the bridge in the freeway. They don't need a permit to stand up there.
Wow, that would be amazing, bro.
They'll come and move them along. They'll come and move them along, but they don't have to have a permit.
Could you imagine picking people up along the way?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, yeah, we ride in. Imagine riding into, whatever. Or people bikes like a river, man, like a tributary. You know what I mean? All these different rivers. They meet us from Delano or wherever you're going to meet up. We're going to be on the 5. You know what I mean? Keep the 5 alive, bro. You know what I mean? Could you imagine that, bro? Bikers, big, you know, 60 deep, 100 deep, going on to the 5 off another freeway to join the ride.
That would be a vision, bro. 200,000.
It's like today, you know, when I was coming home, I got, I stopped for the light, and I had one motor officer pull up on my left, and then another one pull up on my right. And they had some words, wanted me to take off my helmet, thought I was someone else. And I just said, and I just told them, I'm not taking off my helmet, and I don't, I haven't done anything wrong. And then they proceeded to ask me if I was this person, and I said, no, you guys took care of that. I think he's still locked up. And I drove away.
Dude, how do you draw so much?
Well, because I stand up for myself.
Yeah, you sure do. It is funny though, because I mean, you know, you've shared stories with me of how these officers have, you know, they try to mess with you for whatever they see as a violation, and you've set them straight. He's like, no. Remember the time? I think your hammer, was it your hammer or your axe? You had something.
But a hammer.
It was your hammer, and they tried to make you take it off.
They wanted me to put it in the saddlebag, and that's when I told them, no, I'm not doing that, because then you'll tell me it's a concealed weapon and you want to arrest me. I said, but according to, I forget the guy, I think it was Brady, but I said, according to Captain Brady out of the Oceanside CHP office, told me as long as it was zip-tied to the top of the bag, it was legal to carry. There's no gun, there's no law that says you can't carry a hammer.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Yeah, now I remember. Yeah, but you've told me a lot of stories. That's what's good to know. You need to know your rights and your laws and all this stuff, because you're right. I mean, you know, I've had that thing where a cop was over here acting like he was going to come up and hit me, trying to shut me up because I was asking questions. And everybody got scared. I go, no, let him hit me. I've got the right to ask a question. And the cop, he stopped. He tried to flex up like, you know, those gorillas. They come out running out the bushes, trying to run up on you. That's what he tried doing. I said, hit me, please. I need some money.
Well, you know, it's like this. What scares them most is a well-informed citizen.
What scares them most is what?
A well-informed citizen.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
See, like I'll give you a little synopsis of what's going on my blog. These are kind of the things you can expect when you go to my website.
Okay.
Gun confiscation in California. Beware, be warned. No warrant, you don't have to let them in your house.
No warrant.
Nope. And I have by each individual city in California, I have the Sacramento City California knife law. I have the whole USA, the law on locking blade pocket knives. I have the knife laws in California. Is it legal to carry? I have how to deal with the police. It's a chart that tells you what to do. Know your rights when dealing with the police. How to stay out of the back. Let's see. A quick summary across the United States. The United States, or the summary of knife laws, what to do. Nevada. I have Oceanside, I have Orange County, I have L.A. County. Basically, you could find anything on here to get you out of trouble. I have,
wow.
There's also the state knife laws, possessions, knowing your rights, what you can have and what you can't have. It's just like if a cop tells you he doesn't like your helmet, there's no such thing as a Department of Transportation approved helmet because they don't certify them. The manufacturer does.
Wait a minute, really?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
No
wonder they pulled me over. Yeah, they pulled me over. They were going to give me a ticket for a helmet, but then they didn't. They decided to just give me one for something else.
Uh-huh. What was it, something else?
Because I didn't have my registration with me. I had it, but it wasn't with me. It was a fix-it ticket. I just thought he was being cool, but it was because he really can't give me a ticket for that, right?
Mm-hmm. No, they can't. They can't. We just had a guy go to court up in Sacramento with a CHP officer. he arrested. I belong to a group called Bikers of a Lesser Tolerance. But there was a guy up there who went to court, and he beat his helmet ticket. And another guy, the CHP guy, gave him two tickets 15 minutes apart and then arrested the guy. And there's all kinds of, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff on there. What is RICO, and why is it used against Americans?
Wow, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There's another one on there. Let me enlighten you with this one. Call the cops at your own peril. Live free or die is the motto.
Say it again.
Call the cops at your own peril. Live free or die. Because I believe in it. I believe in it like this, Gilbert. If you bend over once, you're going to bend over twice.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be easier the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, man.
I got this little box. That, you know, the government has this little box right now. It's called a Stingray. All they got to do is pull. All they got to do is pull up next to you in a car. They can download your phone, dude.
Whoa! Are you serious?
Yep. They
what?
Can track.
What if your phone? What if you turn your phone off?
Nope, it's still on. There's two batteries in your phone. The battery you charge and the one that's under the SIM card. It's like a hearing aid battery. That counts. Yeah, that holds up your memory.
Okay. And that's what they get?
Yeah. If you go on a blog and type it up in the search box, type in Stingray, and then type in cell phone, and then there's one in there that says how to cop-proof your cell phone.
Hold on, bro. My internet right now in my house, I don't know what's going on. We're having nothing but problems with it, man. Give me a favor. Give me the address where I can go to read your blogs, man.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll put it on your page.
Yeah, put it on my page. Yeah, definitely, bro. Definitely, and I'll talk about our conversation, man. Because I think a lot of people need to hear a lot of
the stuff to share.
Put
the link up for you too. See now. I said I'll put the link on there for you to the show so they can go back and listen to it. It's archived. It'll be archived.
Yeah.
It's free to go back and listen to it. You don't have to pay anything. The only thing you have to do is sign in, and if you do me a favor and follow the show, that increases my numbers. That's all I ask.
Right. Definitely, man. You know, I
let me give you a little bit about what this Stingray box is. Okay?
Yeah.
This is how Stingray devices work. Law enforcement and the military are using devices called Stingrays to track your cell phone, as described in a story in today's Wall Street Journal. The government considers the devices sensitive information, and not much is known publicly about how they are used. But it's possible to get a good idea of how they work based on public documents and interviews with technology experts. The systems involve an antenna, a computer, and a mapping software, and a special device. This device mimics your cell phone tower and gets the phone to connect to it. It then can collect your hardware numbers associated with the phone and can ping the cell phone even if the owner isn't making a call. This can be done through walls. This can be done from 100 yards away, something that is useful in finding as well as victims of crime or accidents. There are two ways to use the device. One way is to point the antenna at a location and collect the hardware numbers there. The numbers can be used to determine which phones are in a given place at any given time. So they can, in other words, me, you, and Amelia are sitting at the Al Tepeyac bar, and now they know where the three of us are.
Wow.
The devices also can be used to locate phone when officers know the numbers associated with it but don't know precisely where it is. In that case, the officers can drive around until they get a signal from the target phone while pinging it. So the target phone would be the informant or the guy that's with the group that doesn't really belong there. Once the signal is found, the Stingray sets up, measures its strength, and can provide a general location on the map. An officer can then move to another location and again measure the signal strength. By collecting the signal information from several locations, they can precisely triangulate the location of the phone. Stingrays alter the normal behavior of cellular devices. In addition, the Stingrays use mode that allow to force the broadband card to communicate, which in other words is your SIM card. which it gets all the, it can download all the information off your SIM card.
Wow.
It's pairing with the simulated base station rather than the usual base station. The simulated base station is the one that's downloading your phone. Right now, there's a case in the district court in the District of Arizona. The defense in that case wants to know just how the Stingray was able to locate a mobile broadband card in an apartment building. The card was key in the later arrest of a defendant on fraud charges.
Wow.
See, didn't even know they had this stuff, huh?
No, man, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
I have a thing on there where the California Records Act, it's a public records act and it's a request. I tell you how to fill it out, what to write, and ever. You got to put the name of the town or your agency or whatever it is, and then you sign it at the end. They have 10 days to answer you, and if they don't answer you in 10 days, then you write a letter to the Department of Justice. And the Department of Justice will find out why they didn't answer you in 10 days. Also, the cops don't need a warrant to track your cell phone.
Wow, man.
Yep.
Man, that's
all an invasion of...
Do you think that... people that would put together a big thing and do something really big for whatever, do you think you'd become targets of that? Like people like yourself, you know, you speak out against injustice, you know.
You've been to some motorcycle runs, haven't you?
You got a few. I'm new still. Remember, not nowhere near as you have. I've been to a few.
You've been to events.
Uh-huh.
Have you been to events where one of the heavy hitter clubs has been? You don't have to say the name. Just have you been to an event where they were present?
Yeah.
What did you see driving around all the whole time?
I didn't even pay attention.
Next time. You'll see the unmarked cars. You'll see the cars with the little cameras on the trunk, the hood, the roof, the trunk lid, the side mirror, the top of the collecting data. They're taking pictures of license plates. When they take the picture of the license plates, there's a guy sitting in the car that runs that number through the computer. Now, if you came up with a warrant, they're going to come in and get you, or they're going to wait till you leave and then get you.
Yeah. Wow. I guess I was naive to all that, you know, being
mm-hmm.
that I was just fascinated by the event that I really
yeah.
didn't realize that there was. You're right, though, I'm sure. That's what I'm thinking, you know, like especially like people like you, though, you know, people like... you start making noise and you start raising more awareness over different things, you know, they start to watch you. You know what I'm saying? Then the more power you get, now they start to really get you. You know, they just want to see, I don't know, it seems like to me they're intimidated by someone who has that much influence over people with
mm-hmm.
information. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, they. It's like I was telling you, if we can get everybody together for one day, just for one day, for however long it took to have that ride, and whatever we did with the cameras or whatever at the end of it, to get the interviews, because you know it's going to generate stories, and then they're going to want to know who started it, and I'm going to put the finger, I'm going to point at you.
And I'll put the finger at somebody else. And you know what? That's what you do. Everybody takes credit for it, so they have to get everybody.
Exactly.
You remember that? That would be so cool, man. And nobody, don't you? It's like, you want to know who the leaders are? Everybody is. Everybody is. This is why I would love to have, to be able to pass on the American flag. Let somebody else lead. Your leaders are Americans. That's who your leaders are. We got a veteran here. This guy served our country. Guess what? He's leading the way. Now we're going to have another guy right here. This guy is so-and-so. He's leading the way. We got a young lady this time. She's going to lead the way from home so-and-so with the American flag on her bike. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the leader? We all the leaders. We all got kids in there. We all got sons in the system.
Friends.
We all got sons. We got North, South, Black, White. We got everybody. Everybody's got, you know, and this is how deep we are. This is what we can do. This is what we got. These are some things that are happening. We want, now that we got your attention, let us tell you about what's going on in Australia.
Exactly.
And what's come over here if you don't. Let us tell you what's going on over here in California that's not even happening in Guantanamo Bay. Now that we got your attention, this is what we want to say.
We got a caller who happens to be in Chicago, Illinois. And let me ask her what she thinks about this. What do you think about that, Nora? Say hello to Gilbert.
Hi, Gilbert.
Hi, Nora. Hi.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. I'm trying to understand, like, is this something that you are trying to work on to bring together? Because I think it would be something worthwhile.
Yes. When he told me about this, that's when I told him I'd bring him on to talk about this. And we're going to go forward with this.
Well, this
and
is
how
do
you
I
feel,
look
Nora?
At it. This is how I look at it. In my state, in Illinois, okay, the price per head, and I'm going to phrase it that way, per housing goes anywhere from $20,000 per inmate up to $28,000, okay, depending upon the facility. And in regards to treatment, how everything is inside a facility, anything of that nature, there's a lot of work that has to be done, you know. And unfortunately, we also have a prison here that was brand new built. It has never been used, ever. It sits there, vacant.
We're going to close down Guantanamo. That's where we're going to put them, and everybody bitched about it.
Exactly. You know, people in the state didn't want it. Me, I could care less. If somebody is going to bomb someplace, they're going to do it. And you're not going to be able to stop it, you know, let's face the fact. But in regards to treatment, you know, we have the worst county jail around, okay? It's nasty. It paints chipping off. Nobody cares. Nobody
hey, Nora?
Has a face. Yeah.
Nora, 36 years ago, I spent a weekend there. It's probably still the same as it was then because the paint was chipping and it smelled bad and everything was fucked up.
It probably is, you know, and this is what I'm saying. You know, so if they're getting anywhere, say, from 21 to 28,000 a year per head, okay, where's the money going? Because it's not in the food. It's not in anything, you know. Let's phrase it this way. I've never been in trouble, never been to jail. Okay, so I can't understand the concept of being locked down in that manner. But how I look at it is if you're going to be locked down in a facility, what society wants is someone that is locked down to come out and to be presentable back into society, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you're going between 21,000 to 28,000 per inmate, okay, to house, that's for to house, clean, dental, schooling, whatever the case is, okay? So tell me, how can anyone be placed into a facility, be paid, the state's paying the houser, okay, and they come out and they're worse than what the majority are going back and going in? So where's the reform?
I'll tell you this.
Okay.
Most, Most of the time when guys go in, they weren't a criminal. When they come out, they're a criminal. They learn how to.
Right.
They learn how to.
They learn out from each other. And, you know, the thing is, you know, the majority of them that go down are on low charges, you know, not anything worthwhile if you're in a minimum security, whatever. Now, in this state, okay, you said Pelican Bay. Okay, that's the worst of the worst that is, you know, where is housing in your state, correct?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Pelican Bay. Now, here we have Statesville. So that's 23 out of 24 down, okay? They've been on a permanent lockdown since, I want to say, about the late 80s because of a riot that took place. There is no, they cannot come out. They are in their cell, like I said, 23 out of 24 hours a day. So their come-out time is shower and whatever else they need to do, okay? And then they're right back in that cell. And the thing about Statesville, I don't know if you've ever seen anything on it on the History Channel or something.
Yeah, I have.
It's a circle, and the guard is housing right in the middle of the circle. So, I mean... How annoying would that be? You're in the circle. But, you know, at least there, cellmates. And, you know, but like I said, I don't care what facility, federal, state, whatever. How would someone want to better themselves if they don't have that opportunity? Does that make sense? And maybe I'm just looking at it different because I'm close or been in trouble. But I don't judge people if they've been locked down or not. But I think, my opinion, there's a lot that has to be done to be fixed in the facilities, in the system itself, because so much of it doesn't work. So maybe if there could be a huge gathering to come forward and say, excuse me, you know, conditions are very poor. What can we do to better the inside of each facility or to better not only the inside of the facility, but better conditions for the inmates, okay? Because something does have to change. It's ridiculous, you know.
And that answer may come from somebody who doesn't ride, somebody who doesn't belong to anything like that. However, they do know there's a problem, and maybe they can come up with an idea of how to do things. But how can they do that if they don't know? And how are they going to know unless somebody tells them? And so, to me, I'm just saying I see the power of riding, bike riding, that the riders and the culture of riders, that it's a very powerful power, more powerful than I think that people realize, because I didn't even realize until Saturday when I went on this ride and I just saw the power. I was a part of something so big, and you're always as big as whatever it is that you're a part of. That's how big you are. I mean, if you're a tiny little fish, but you swim with the great white shark, you're as big as that shark. There's nothing going to mess with you. They got to go. So you're a part of that. You're united with that. You know, it's
right.
You're in union with whatever you are part of. So when I saw how powerful I was, I realized that this was nothing but a microcosm of the bigger picture of how many bikers are throughout California.
Right. Which, you know, I can't say I understand the concept of your state, and I'll tell you why, because I've never been there. I know it's like a huge state, and I would be lost in a minute, you know, if I were to be there. I wouldn't know where to go. Illinois, it's easy. You're 5 hours south, and you're in Kentucky. You're 2.5 hours north, and you're in Wisconsin. You're possibly 3 hours west. You're in Iowa. You're a half hour east, you're in Indiana. So, you know, that's a little bit easier than, like, in your stakes that's so long and big. But now, is it something from how you want to do a project
San Diego,
like this? Where you come from? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You want to take over? Go ahead, Phil.
Is there something from your background that had you put this thought into action? If
no.
That makes sense?
I can answer that.
Right.
Basically, what it is we both happen to know people who are down.
Right.
And some of the stuff was brought to the attention, some wasn't. Some got found out by seeing it. And basically what Gilbert and I talked about was bringing attention to that. So he was telling me how if we got all the motorcycle riders or the clubs or anybody that rides a bike to get involved in this, somebody would have
right.
to take a look because this many people brought attention to it.
Right.
Am I correct, Gilbert?
Man, politicians eat that stuff up like vultures.
Well, because they don't want attention.
Right, bro?
They
see all
attention.
That. All them votes, they just see votes on wheels, bro. Ooh, that
right,
sounds good. Votes on wheels.
Right, but understand this, Gilbert. Politicians don't want attention. They don't want attention drawn into any sector of where it could do any kind of damage to an upcoming election or anything. So they would want to nip it in the butt as fast as they could or try to make it appear that they will work with a situation at hand instead of seeing a bigger force coming. Does that make sense?
Well, sure. But he'll marry another man if it would get him elected into office, even if he's straight. He doesn't care. So politicians
exactly.
go with the votes. They don't care what the... They don't care. If they go with the votes, if they see 200,000 voters on bikes, they will go and they will believe me. They will go with them. Why do you think a lot of politicians aren't even religious, but they team up with the religious community because of the votes?
Right.
That's why I didn't trust George Bush. I did later, but I didn't trust him at first. But to me, he was just, you know, playing the whatever. But then after he became president, I go, I don't care. I'm going to support my president regardless of who it is. That's why I looked at it. But politicians,
right.
I got a lot of friends. I work with a lot of them. I don't trust them. That's the bottom line. And I don't, you know, I hope don't offend nobody.
And they don't trust.
Basically, they don't trust you either.
They don't trust you either, is that what you said?
Yeah.
The government doesn't trust the citizens.
Is that why they don't want us to have guns and stuff?
No, they don't trust the citizens in regards to an uprising if things get worse, you know.
Well, here, let me give you this quote by Dr. Martin Luther King. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
Say that again.
Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
Wow.
Right. So if you become the sheep, then you've rolled over. If you become opposite of the sheep, then you become a threat to the government. Meaning if you make a voice, they don't want to hear you, and they want to keep you quiet. If you become the sheep and follow exactly what they say, then you're the best citizen they want to have.
Yeah, and I do have concerns about that. You're right, because and I was going to ask you about that, like in private, Phil. I was going to ask you, but since it's out, she brought it up. What repercussions do you see from something like this succeeding? Like she said, if you're a sheep rolling over, yeah, but they see you, like I was talking about power, with some power, I mean, are you going to, you know, what do you see anything, any repercussions coming from people
like
who don't agree with what we're doing?
Like I said, it's like I said in the beginning when they said, hey, who started this?
He did. We're going to point at everybody. I'm going to point at Nancy. I'm going to say, was it Nancy? Is that your name, Nancy?
Nora.
Nora. We'll blame it on Nora. I'll say, here's Nora from Illinois, man. Go talk to her.
Well, I do have one more thing to say, if that's okay. Now, if this is able to come together the way that you both would like it to happen, since I'm not in your state and other people wouldn't be in your state, is there a way to help the cause without being there? Can you think about that?
I don't know. What do you think, Phil? I would think that people from my, this is a federal thing. This isn't just a California thing. It's just happening in California. But the other thing is in Guantanamo Bay. So yes, of course, these are American citizens basically speaking up, saying, "Hey, if you're gonna, you know, if the Constitution, you're gonna apply the Constitution to people who try to take us out. Why can't you at least apply that same Constitution to the Roman citizens? I think the Roman citizens have more rights than non-Roman citizens. You know what I'm saying? That's the way it was back in the days. If you want, you couldn't just bring a Roman citizen to trial. It had to be done by the Romans. The Romans were very protective of their citizens. Well, why can't we do the same? We fashion our everything after the Roman government. Why not start, you know, come on. Even, they talk about the cruelty of Rome and what they did to the gladiators and to the Christians and to all these other people. I mean, really? But yet you are doing the same thing over here. You're punishing people over here who are Roman citizens. You're treating non-Roman citizens better than them. Is that fair?
Okay. Now, if possible, a suggestion, if it hasn't been thought of already, if you want this thing to go big, then bring in some names that have been seen on screen. That will draw bigger attention.
Let me touch on that. What I was talking to Gilbert about when he brought this up, I like the idea. And right now we're the preliminary stage of how we're gonna set this up. But I already know, and I think he already knows, the people that we know would probably get behind this because they know. And you talked to one person about this, and I was standing there when you talked to him. You remember who we were talking to, Gilbert?
The long-haired guy? Was it the long-haired guy or the guy from down in San Diego?
Right. And we also talked to the other guy. We talked to the guy who sponsored that ride. He said the same thing. Especially when you told him, "Hey, bro, we're they like us up there."
Right.
You remember now?
Oh,
I know exactly
they love us.
Right.
Guy, I know guys. You know guys. That guy knows guys.
Yep.
All we got to do is a phone call be made, and I guarantee you.
And put it together. Yeah.
Put it together.
Oh, bro, I know this. If we get the riders, this is what I don't know if you were heard the original. I don't think you did. I was talking to another guy about, you know, because when I was actually seeing it, me and him were talking. This is what came up that we were just, and I was like, you know, the power and all this. And then when I started bringing up, he started bringing up stuff like that. And I told him, don't worry about that. That's the least of my concerns, you know. And that was people sabotaging it, these different conflicts between these different people. That I'm like, well, I really think that would be the least of my concerns. My only concern, and that is generating enough riders. That would be that's my only concern. I don't have any other concerns other than that.
Well,
it's
like I told you in the beginning of this conversation, politics sometimes kills everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm wondering. How do we get around that? How do we do this? How do we do this incognito? The ride will be big, but how do we do it where we don't make a big deal out of saying this is what it is? We just, when we get to Sacramento, we talk about, you know what? We're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about. When we get to Sacramento, we'll let you know what we want to talk about, but this is the attention that we want to bring. We're bringing some issues to Sacramento, that's all.
Well, months ago, there was a huge ride in California, and I was able to witness some of it on video. It was amazing, the turnout. Politicians were there. Whatever took place after, you know, that I can't say because I don't live in your state. But the outpour of the community coming together on two wheels was amazing. It was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 200,000 bikers would be, if you were to get 200,000 bikers to ride to Sacramento, you could say whatever you want. Because now that I got your attention, guess what's going on? That's what we can do. I think that if we do that, then if somebody has a problem, it's better to apologize. Someone once told me it's better to apologize than to ask permission sometimes.
Right.
Because if you ask permission, they won't let you do it. But if you do it and you weren't supposed to, all you got to do is apologize. But guess what? You got to do it.
Right.
That's it.
Well, if there's any way I can help, let me know.
Yeah, we'll try to figure that. You know what, Phil? We got to figure out how people who live outside of California, how can they be a part of it? How can they help? Can they call the congressman? I don't know. We have to look into that, and we will, so that we can let people know.
Mm-hmm. This isn't just something we're talking about. This is something that is going to come to fruition.
Yeah, and it's a dream. And everything starts with a thought, with a dream, with inspiration. And this is where we're at. And now we're making it happen by talking about it. And I'm hoping it's going to generate more interest so we can get a gauge of what we got. And I think that
it'll snowball.
Guy,
exactly. But I got a guy queued up right now that he's going to tell you about the American dream. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucked. And it's the same reason that will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pocket. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking.
Did you hear what he said right there? That's what scares them the most. This right here.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
They're all your friends.
George Carlin?
It's George Carlin. That's from 2009, brother.
Wow, right before he passed away, man.
But that's the nail on the head. And that's what scares them the most, well-informed citizens.
Well, you know, that's what they did back in slavery and back in the old Bible days, or they couldn't in England. They wouldn't even let you translate the good book in any language. They wouldn't let you read for yourself. They would tell you what to believe. And then same thing over here, you know, fast forward years later, the same thing with the slaves. They wouldn't let them read, kept them dumb so they couldn't, you know. So same thing with us. They want to keep us in that ignorant mentality. You're right. And once you start learning and speaking up, now you're making it difficult for them to get their way. Well, no, George, brother died years ago, he's still speaking.
He's talking from the grave, don't
you? Yeah, man. Wow, I like that. I like that. How would you...
Go ahead.
How many San Diego riders do you guys think you can get?
Probably right now, if I put out an action alert, probably about 600 to 700.
Wow.
But if I broadcast it for a couple of weeks ahead of time...
Uh-huh.
Thousand, maybe 2,000-3,000. If I did it for a little bit, a couple of months, maybe 5,000-10,000.
Wow.
You know, it's just like I tell people all the time. I'm not adversarial against the police. I'm adversarial against the guys that take advantage of their job and carrying a badge. And that's basically what goes on in the prison system too. Because you know, if you don't behave, you're going to get fucked up.
Yeah, and my thing, Phil, is I'm not condoning, nor am I. Again, I got two brothers that were victims of the prison system. They were victims themselves, but they ended up in the prison system, and they were kept there by any violation all their lives. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is that I'm not even advocating for the inmates, for this and that. I'm not. I believe that if you hurt people, you need to pay the crime, pay the price. You pay the piper. I did my crimes. I said, you know what? If I got arrested for them, when I got my crimes arrested, I didn't blame nobody. I didn't call. I said, you know what? I did it. Whatever comes, just do it. I'm responsible. So, and I believe that. But what I'm saying, all I'm trying to bring attention to is let everybody just to see, hey, this is what's going on. If you're going to punish, you cannot punish these guys like this. It's against our Constitution. It's a cruel and inhumane punishment. And that is when you have guys that are being tortured and killed and whatever that they are in other places. They don't allow that. But yet you're going to sit there and torture somebody daily by the way you've separated them from everything. It's not, psychiatrists will all tell you, it's not good for the human. That's, people go nuts. They go crazy from that torture. We can't allow that to happen to anybody.
Absolutely. I mean, here's these guys. These guys are not out of New York. Do you remember when they were doing the stop and frisk in New York?
No.
Okay. It's been going on forever. Chicanos, blacks, Puerto Ricans, immigrants, white people, whoever. They mostly targeted the minorities first. These guys here, this is from the Police Reform Organizing Project. This guy here, his name is Chuck Berkeley. Listen to what this guy says. Once you hear what this guy says, you'll understand where I'm coming from with this.
If you didn't see the Central Park 5 documentary, go see that. When I saw that, I only had like 4 years on the job at the time. So I was just learning. But what really was heartfelt was when you looked at those young boys, and I know the whole story. When you look at those young boys who was crying and pouring out for help, and they thought they were going to get it from their parents, the parents didn't even know how to protect their kids when it came to law enforcement. That's why we educate the community on what to do when stopped by the police. We educate parents because parents don't know, even if you do, which you shouldn't, but if you do give the police department the permission to talk to your loved one, if you do, at any given time, you can stop it. At any given time. But you never should give the police department the permission to speak to your loved one if they're arrested. We tell the young folks out there, don't speak to them. I'm going to use part of my time to just give you a simple demonstration of what I teach young kids. When you're walking down the street, you get a call and the police get a call. If the police stop you in an area, I'm going to give you a Saturday night, whatever area you're at, and the police stop you, do you know why they're stopping you? They're stopping you because you're the only one in that vicinity. So right then and there, you are the perpetrator. You don't know you're the perpetrator because they're not going to tell you you're the perpetrator. What they try to do is stop you by engaging you. How you doing, sir? Or whatever. Sir, did you see a car? Did you hear a gunshot? Did you see somebody run? And what you think is you think, because you're not the perpetrator, right? You tend to think, well, let me help them out, or let me defend myself. You don't have to defend yourself. The burden of proof is on them. Keep your damn mouth shut. This is what I tell the young folks, that if that was to happen to you as you're walking, you say, officer, am I under arrest? No, you're not under, well, then I must be free to leave. And then you start to leave. Let him or her say, no, you can't leave. Well, then, officer, am I under arrest? No, you're not. Well, then I must be free to leave. Well, no, I want to ask you something. Well, officer, am I under arrest? You keep saying that because let me tell you something. If the police had the right to arrest you, do they ever ask you? They do it. So I teach, you just say that. When the officer says, well, listen, you're not under arrest. I just want to know, did you see a car? Did you hear a person scream? Did you hear gunshots? You're the officer. Am I under arrest? And if they say, well, you know, you're smart because you know what comes behind that, right? Okay, officer, you're under arrest. Okay, officer, you turn around and you put your hands behind him and say, here, take me. Here. But you don't say nothing. Say, 9 times out of 10, they're going to push you away. Because they're going to say, you know, if they don't have enough, they're going to say, I can't lock this person up. But what you just did is you showed them you're not afraid to get arrested. The other way you handle that situation is you do this. A cop stops you. Excuse me. You live around here. This is what you do. And you look him or her straight in the eye, and you just do this. Excuse me, did you hear what I said? Do you live around here? Can you tell me your name? It's easy. Just don't say nothing. Now they got a decision to make. Either lock you up, beat you up, or let you go. Now there's going to be some derogatory statements coming behind that. But you know what? I guarantee you that 99% of the time, at the end of that confrontation, you'll be walking like this in a way and on your way. That's what you do. Stop trying to prove to them that you're not the person they're looking for. That's up to them to do. Another thing, know your rights.
in this book, it's only about 28 pages. I give you what you should do when you're stopped by the police, what you should do if the police come knocking at your door, what you should do if the police stop you at your car, in your car, what the passengers should do, what to do if you're brought to a police precinct because some people don't know what's, you know, what to expect, what to do after you've been violated by the police, how to fight them back, and get in touch with our organizations, because we will come out and we will help you. I can't go down to CCRB anymore. They don't want me down there. Because when I've escorted people down there, they say, you can't come in. You know why? Because when I went down there with some people that was complaining, they placed semantics with a person's words. And I'm sitting there and I said, listen, if this lady said the officer slapped her, then the officer slapped her. You don't have to say to her, well, did the officer inadvertently put his hand up? What are you talking? She's a grown woman. She knows if she's been slapped. Just like grown men, they know if they've been hit or violated. You know, stop making excuses for the police. Or, well, they told me you can't come down here. You know, it's all right. It's okay, because if I can educate enough and you can stand and use that backbone in your spine and stand up for what's right, you'll be okay, because when you leave there, you got us. You got us. And you're going to have your community behind you if they just would stop being scared. We as a people need to stop being afraid.
You get that, Gilbert?
Wow. Who is that?
It's the guy's name is Chuck Berkeley. He's out of, he's an NYPD detective. And,
Wow.
Retired guy.
Right?
Got together with another group.
What? Hey, do you know any cops? I mean, I know you do, but I mean, do you feel that there's cops and lawyers and other people that would stand behind this? Because, you know, if you would have cops, you know, behind us saying, hey, yeah, you know, punish the guys, but don't over-punish them. That's all we're asking. Let the crime fit the punishment. That's all. And you cannot punish our
citizens. That guy was just talking, him and four other guys started a group called the Police Reform Organizing Project, called PROP. I'll send you the link.
Wow.
I just put some other ones up there for you too.
Man. Yeah, well, you know what, brother? I think that this thing here seems to be taking on a life of its own, and the blocks of, you know, the foundation right now, I think, has been laid. I think we just start building on that foundation to start, you know, going from there, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I think that's something, you know, I know that I can get, I mean, I think that when calls are made, other phone calls will be made to bring in and others that will ride with us. Again, everybody has family. Even the guys up there, they have families that ride. Well, call your family. Tell them to call their friends who ride. Let's do this. If it's for you, help us out.
Exactly.
If this is for you guys, help us out. And then, Lord willing, and my thing and my faith, when all this is said and done, all I want to know is to be able to just ask in return, take care of our brothers inside the system, the black ones, the white ones, the ones that are being hurt because of their skin color. We rode together, north, south, black, white, and brown, to help you guys. Help us out. Just take care of our sons in there. That's my ultimate goal, bro. Too many people getting killed in there just because they go in there and they live in L.A. or Delano, or because they're white, or because they're black, or because they're a different shade of white. you know, well, these white guys don't get along with the other white guys because they got a different colored band or whatever they got, different color tattoos, and vice versa. You know, I mean, I just, I, you know, when I do, I've done prisons all over the country, Phil. I've done comedy shows. I was sharing with you. I've been on AdSec. I've talked to Hannibal Lecters. They've taken me. I've talked to inmates that nobody else can talk to.
Right.
I have been in places that no other people can go. I have been in Alabama, the prisons of Alabama, Mississippi, Colorado, Delaware, Texas. I have just been everywhere, and I'm noticing, and I see things that are, how would I say? I have seen ugly. I mean, and I have, and I really would love to just see that this thing that we put together. I don't want it to. I'm not doing it. I'm sharing my ulterior motives here. I'm not doing it so much. I'm doing it for the bigger picture. This started uniting by writing.
You know, it all starts with the first step.
Wow. I'm ready, my brother. I am ready. I am here for you. I know you're here for me. I think that if we can get everybody, I think this will be all right, bro. I think this will be all right. And who knows, we might even bring in some big wigs to speak. Let's bring in a big shot from the black community that's going to speak up and make some noise. Let's bring in a big shot from different communities in the Latino community. Come on, get up there and say something. Or, you know, whatever, you know. People that, let's get some big names behind it. I'm sure you'll get celebrities that are going to jump on board with this.
Mm-hmm. And we know some celebrities that have done time.
Really? Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
Mickey Rourke. Really? Like who? Like I'm trying to think of who was.
Yeah.
Oh, Tommy Chong.
Yeah, we don't have to throw their names out, but you know what? You know, we know people that have done time.
Wow. Yeah, no, that'd be cool, my brother. That would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll talk about what's next, what we go from here, and I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, we're down to the last few minutes, but I'm trying to think of a good song here. I got some of them. Hey, you never heard the beginning of my show, huh?
No, uh-uh.
All right, check this out, and then we'll talk after. But this one's called Rolling Stone. It's by Mike P. He's out of San Fernando Valley.
Mike what?
Mike P. They call him Mike P, the big homie.
Mike P, the big homie. All right, cool.
Yeah, check this out.
All right.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Close to the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on major for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media. Just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control.
Hey.
A bad motherfucker, riding through the night.
Hey.
A filthy motherfucker, and I love a fucking bike.
Picture me rolling on my chopper on red.
No love for the other side, no need to be friends.
Get the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing.
Got an out, chin check the dose, and need an ass for the ticket.
That's
a ticket, man, I ain't gonna pay.
Got
to do 30 days locked up in CJ.
Let's
twist the throttle, let's hit the rolling.
Come
on. My drag pipe on my bike, get the blowin'.
A third motherfucker street calling
hey.
Me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat.
Come
don't approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I'm like half the motherfuckers
hey.
That live in my hood. I'm a 10-year roller to the bone.
With 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole.
Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always
hit
a bar. My whole voice my rubber, but we never ever fall.
Come
at the
on.
End of the day, we can always stand tall.
The gov don't like me, oh fucking well.
I guess you can call me the angel from hell.
What do you think of that?
That's your opening song?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's very fun.
Cool, man. Mike P., I'm from the Valley. San Fernando Valley?
That's correct.
That's what I was
saying. He's on the other team.
He's on the other team?
He's on the other team.
Okay.
I'll tell you about that off the air.
Yeah, that, that's what I was saying. Okay, that's what I said. Okay. I think I know, but we'll see.
Yeah, I have, no, you're probably correct, but I have to give equal time to everybody, which is anytime I talk about them, I always know I get they always know they're welcome to come and rebut anything that's said about them.
I know, that's cool.
Yeah, Richard Montoya is going to be on tomorrow, and then Emilio and Nicholas should be here Thursday. So if you want to check in tomorrow.
Oh, okay, cool. Tomorrow's Wednesday night. I got to work tonight. I got to go and I got to get ready and go do. I'm working tonight. Tomorrow night.
Plug yourself. Where you at? Tell everybody where you're at.
Well, tonight I'm at the starting gate over here in Los Alamitos. I'm going to be at the Ice House here. I don't know if it's next Wednesday or tomorrow. I got to find out. One of these Wednesdays I'm at the Ice House in Pasadena, but I'm in Detroit, Michigan, May 23rd and 24th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, not that far from me.
And Armando's Comedy Club. Then I'll be there in Southfield, Michigan, right by Detroit, June for Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is, let me see the flyer. It's going to be where? Southfield, okay.
Mm-hmm. If you've got any direct links to any of your stuff, send them to me, and I'll post them in the friends column. That way people can keep up with, because that'll give them, when we start planning this thing and we start handing out information for this ride, they'll have a link to go to if they want to contact you.
Oh, anytime you need to contact, we just go to Facebook. I do all my business. I do everything off of Facebook. I don't even have a website no more. Don't need a website. With Facebook, that's where I'd make my money. I just go on Gilbert Esquivel, comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Or just put Gilbert comedian, and the only two comics will come up, me and Gilbert Gottfried. You can go on YouTube. I'm all over YouTube. Just punch my name in there, you know, and you'll know what I'm about. You know, talks all about me, different organizations that I work with, and different things that I've done. Like I said, I've done prisons. I've done comedy all over prisons all over the United States. And I don't go there to entertain inmates. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in paying back people, rewarding people who make mistakes. I don't believe in that. I do believe, though, that I have something to share with you that helped me. It may not be for you, but it was for me. So that's what I go for. And hopefully, you know, maybe have people, it will help me, may help somebody else. It's not for everybody, but again, who am I to say? But that's what I do. I go for it to do those kind of things, bro. That's what I'm about, man. I'm about seeing people, because like Nora was saying, all this money and all this stuff, they're not rehabilitating people. Rehabilitation has to come from you, I believe. You got to want it. Nobody else is going to help you.
That's it. I mean, I can tell you myself, the day I went to court, the day I left for the Marine Corps, I left the courthouse. Me, the recruiter, my lawyer, the prosecutor, and the judge in the judges of chambers, and I did my first tour, and never looked back. Changed my life. Somebody gave me a shot that day, and I.
Wow! You know what happened to me when I was in juvenile hall, and I was going to do time. I was already. I mean, my story just goes on and on and just, but. When I was there, I was already 19 years old. I was already an adult, but my crimes were for the juvenile crimes. But I was on the run for so long, and I went to a different state. And anyways, came back, they finally got me. The judge, when I came back, that's when I realized, okay, I'm 18 now. It's time to grow up. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm an adult. I'm going to do adult time. So what can I do that's legal that I know how to do that I'm good at? And I go, well, sales, because I was a salesman. And I go, well, let me find a legitimate product to sell. And I did it, and I was on my first day, I set a company record. I was a door, I went, I sold door to door. I was a salesman. Set a company record on my first day, all right? But the judge had made me, I had enrolled in school, and I got into an acting class, and I got a, when I told the judge saw that, he started looking at me and said, I see you've been enrolled in school, you haven't been arrested in 18 months, and you're enrolled in acting class? And he goes, you want to be an actor? I go, yeah, it's always been my dream. I told him, that's always been my dream.
He goes, I'll make a deal with you. He goes, if I let you go today, you promise me that when you make it, you'll come back and give me your autograph. And I said, yeah. And you know that judge let me go? He dropped all charges.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I followed through with my dreams. I did. Everything I set out to do in 1979, I did it. I went, and I'd say when I was in Idaho, I was told everybody there, I'm not coming back here until, and that's where I was born. I go, but I'm not coming back here until I make it. And when I went back to Idaho 20 years later, bro, about maybe 20 years later, I was literally, it was over 20 years, but I sold out two shows at the Napa Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
I did what I said I was going to do. And all these things that all these people were trying to always teach me when I was a little kid, don't gangbang, don't do this. And they kept telling me, don't. It wasn't until this little lady told me that what I could do, and she reminded me and she taught me that anything I dreamt about doing, I could do it. And when she started teaching, she made a soldier out of me. She made turn me into a Marine. I went for it, and I was so busy trying to accomplish my mission that I didn't have time to get in trouble.
Right. Me too.
And this is the message I want to take to these guys, these inmates. I take this message to them, how God helped me, changing my mind instead of a can't do, I can do. But instead of taking and stealing to giving, it's a different animal, and it works with different benefits. And this is the message that I want to take to you as an inmate. But you know what I'm saying? This, all these things, if this works, it's only going to help me and my cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. And then we see guys rehabilitated so people like Nora can sit there and say, well, I see what's needed. I don't see nothing happening. Well, you know why? It's got to be more. It takes a village to keep an inmate out of to raise a child. It takes a village also to keep that inmate from going back. We all
right.
got to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
Give him a job. Stop. My brother can't even get a job right now. He had a job. My brother had a job. He went, again, okay, they're ready, but oh, we're going to do a background check. He told them everything. They okay, but they said, oh, sorry. They couldn't because of his background.
Yeah,
on top of that, it wasn't even true what they said. But okay, well, good. Just don't go steal. Don't go rob nobody. Let's see. We'll just keep holding on. We'll find you a job.
It's like me. I work on a Navy base, and I had to pass an extensive background check, and in order to get my, I have a top secret clearance and other stuff that I basically earned. And I've worked with guys for almost 20 years now. That we work on a Navy base, and 2 years ago they started going deeper into people's background. And then last year they went deeper, and then now they go, this year they went back to time, the beginning of time.
Wow.
If something was, they got
wow.
to check what it was. Yeah.
I hope I never have to get a job, bro. Oh, man, it's going to be, yeah, they make it, you know, they make it, it's hard enough for the working class to get a job right now. People that got to graduate. They graduated college even. People that have a resume. It's hard for them to get a job, let alone somebody who went to prison.
Yeah. No, you're right. I agree with you 100%.
So if I got to feed my kids, man, and I really don't want to get in trouble, but I can't get a job, man. The last thing, I'd rather go to jail before I see my kids start. Come on, give me this drugs. I'll sell them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey, if I can, I'm serious. Let me tell you, I'm a sold out blood born again Christian. Love the Lord with all my. I'm straight up sold out. But the minute I gotta feed my kids, I will do what I gotta do to feed my babies. Okay, that's the bottom line. You know, I ain't no better than nobody who went to prison. You know, I'm just a man. You know what I mean? And I gotta tell you, bro. But again, we need to do more. We can't just say, well, what are they doing to rehabilitate people? Well, good, nothing. But what are we going to do? What can we do? Like Nora said, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, let's all find out. We got to talk about that. What can we do? What we don't even know, bro.
Well, the next
you know,
time,
maybe Nora can send some advice or something. You know, I don't know.
The next time you have a free moment, like tonight, we'll pick this up where we left off.
It sounds good, my brother. I'm really, really honored and I'm fortunate and blessed to have someone like you to with your knowledge. You know, you've been wired for a day such as this, bro. You know, all that stuff you've been through is for a moment such as this. And I'm really, really honored that someone like yourself is on really just sees the vision. I feel like this happened by accident, but I don't believe in accidents. So I am honored to be working with you on this, bro.
Yeah, we're gonna do it, brother.
We got some friends that want to do it, so they'll help us. Some good friends. Richard Montoya, I'm sure Richard. Really, we got to get Richard a bike, dude. Now that he's Mr. Big Time Director, this guy, we
can't
get
out of that caddy, homie. That's his.
What's that?
He can't get out of that caddy.
Oh, really? He's stuck in the caddy? Hey, by the way, man, I thought that movie that he did was pretty cool, man. It was, matter of fact, I'm going to do a review on it on Facebook, but it was pretty cool. It kept me wondering what was going to happen next. That's what I love in the movie. I like a movie that's going to keep me thinking, keeps me guessing. It wasn't a crash, bang, shoot 'em up movie. Like, it was actually better than I expected, because you think, okay, this guy here, there's gangs, but there was no gang members were even killed in the movie. I don't, you know, just.
Oh, well, you know, everybody asked at the bottom of it. I don't know if you remember the credits, but it said no animals or cholos were hurt during the filming of this movie.
that was funny, dude. That was funny. But, yeah, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the ride. It was a beautiful thing to see. I really enjoyed the people that rode.
That, to me, that's a fucking awesome movie.
It was cool, dude. I'm telling you, I'm gonna write. I was supposed to write a review the other day, but I just, gotta find. I don't know how to write reviews for a movie, man. Come on, I'm a cholo, bro. I'm gonna go check it out, eh? I gotta find the right words, oh yeah. But yeah, man. No, it was cool, man. But let's can't wait till next time. Like I said, we'll take over from here. Hopefully by that time we'll have more info, and I'm gonna start making some phone calls myself. I'll start seeing, put the feelers out there on the other side. You know what I mean? On the inside, I should say. You too. Put your feelers out on the inside, bro, and see what you can get, and then I'll do the same.
Yeah. I forgot to tell you. In May 1st, the United States Supreme Court refused to hear a case on indefinite detention. That's where they can arrest you, and they don't have to tell anybody where you're at and hold you forever.
Oh, crap. June 1st?
No, yeah. May 1st.
Oh, May 1st.
They refused to hear the case on that indefinite detention. I'm gonna post the story tonight. I sent you the links to the blog.
All right, that'll work.
Okay.
That'll work, my brother.
All right, I want to thank you for stopping by, and don't be a stranger, and I'll talk to you soon.
You got it, baby.
Gilbert.
Bye, Nora.
Bye.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening, and the people we didn't get to you that I didn't bring out on the air. I'm sorry about that, but that's one of the reasons we do what we do. So I want to say goodnight, everybody, and I'll play Bill's favorite, a little Summertime. Talk to you guys later.
Good night.
Yeah. Mike P, the big homie. Summertime in the valley, homie. Yeah. Come on.
B-A-L-L-E-Y. Hey, Gilbert, you still there?
Yeah, bro.
Okay, this is about the San Fernando Valley, this song. Check this out.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike P, the big homie. Summertime in the valley, homie. Yeah. Come on.
B-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. B-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. It's summertime in the valley, baby. It's summertime in the valley, it's summertime in the valley, baby. It's summertime in the valley. Twist the bottle open, homie, throw away the cap. Cause where we going, man, we don't need that. All we need is a 30 pack, a pack of Jimmy's trash, pack of hood rats, and a pad to kick it at. I think I'll call Swim, see what's up with him. If I can throw some hoes in the pool again. When it comes to having fun, I'm a motherfucking addict. Once again, I'm back at it, baby mama, too dramatic. And goddamn it, it's about that time. Then drink up the vodka, beer, and wine. Not even Friday night, drunk for the 10th time.
another rhyme. Cause hey, all I wanna do is drink beer and screw, hang on the avenue and go home with you when the party ends. Mike P back again, representing C-A-L-L-E-Y. We stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. C-A-L-L-E-Y. We stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. Up my Mike P, and it's likely that you just might be my new right T. I'm just playing. Tell me, baby girl, hey, are you leaving or staying? There's a pool party going on, I'm all jumping. Kick back for a second, bring a couple of friends. I don't know the type of Chris that you been in, but my backyard look like a fucking Caribbean. Waterfalls, waterfalls, let's slip, let's fly. Jump in the pool, act a fool. I'm way too cool, call me GQ Smooth. It's a player's holiday, so it's time to celebrate. Got chicken on the grill, put some beer and steak. The feeling so great in the 818. It's a summertime breeze for the summertime G's and the summertime ladies with the double double D's. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie.
Yeah, this next verse right here goes out to everybody cruising Lower Canyon, homie, in 1999, 2000. Yeah, this one's for you, straight up.
In the town of 818 of the L.A. counties, there's a place that we roll in the San Fernando Valley. A little boulevard that's called Lower Canyon, where all the chicken heads go when it's time for landing. Hit the street looking clean, rolling these up in a Cadillac. Open too short like a big motherfucking Mac. Take a sip of yak just to get right. Holla at some hoes at the next red light. From Fox Avenue all the way to Brand. Turn around and come back to the three-wheel stand. 64, watch it jump, hydraulics in the trunk. Turn my bass up and watch my 12-inch bump. Can't fuck with my ride, homie, don't try. I'm fucking with my senses like suicide. Back to them hoes, little lady, what's your name? She rolling way hard in a blue Ford Range. She said, what's your name? I said, I'm Mike P. The lady of the night is what you might be. She said, I heard of you, you a player, right? Don't get mad at me, girl, cause I keep my game tight. She gave up the number with no fuss and fight. I'll be up in that ass later on tonight. Jump back in my ride, swerve away from the curb. Back on the boulevard for another chick to serve. Not even 8 o'clock, only got 6 numbers. I can tell right now it's gonna be a great summer. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie. C-A-L-L-E-Y, we stay G'd up and fly all the time, yeah. Summertime in the SFV, something for my 818 homie.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, my brother.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.